children have nearly universally recognized rights to both their mother and father, and increasingly, those rights are in jeopardy.
This is Family Policy Matters with NC Family President John Rustin.
Thanks for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. I think we would all agree that for those of us who are parents, the well-being of our children is always a top priority. More and more these days, however, conversations about parenting and family formation are becoming more focused on the desires of adults rather than on the fundamental rights and the needs of children. At times, it seems even that children can almost become a commodity in the discussion about the type of family adults want and desire. There's a new organization called Them Before Us that has recently been founded to bring greater attention to this issue and to put the focus back on the fundamental rights and well-being of the children. We're joined today by Them Before Us founder and director Katie Faust. After working for the largest Chinese adoption agency in the world, Katie began her public campaign in 2012 to change the tenor of the debate surrounding all things family in favor of the rights of children. Katie, welcome to Family Policy Matters. It's great to have you with us on the show.
Thanks so much for having me, John.
Well, Katie, thanks for being with us. Now, tell us about the underlying problem as you see it with many of today's conversations about family and parenting.
Yeah, well, I think that your listeners will agree and understand that whenever we have these conversations about marriage or parenthood or a lot of the major social issues that we're facing, you know, even including abortion, the discussion always focuses on the desires of the adults, that the desires of adults take center stage. And oftentimes the children are an afterthought or simply there to endorse whatever it is that the adults, you know, are pursuing. And so that's a major problem. That's a major problem because especially when it comes to family structure, children have nearly universally recognized rights to both their mother and father. And increasingly, those rights are in jeopardy.
So, Katie, how did this new organization, Them Before Us, come to be, and what is your mission?
So, our mission is to be a group of adults who are advocating for the rights of children. And the reason it came about is because when I started writing about this back in 2012 around the marriage debate, I was pulling out my hair because it felt like everybody was talking about what adults wanted, and nobody was talking about how marriage has been the most child-friendly institution the world has ever known, because it brings together these three social-emotional staples of a child's diet, and the love of their mother, the love of their father, and stability. And there's no other institution that does that. And yet, in all of our conversations around marriage, we were just talking about the desires of adults, and sometimes framing those in terms of language that had to do with adults' rights, a right to marry or a right to parenthood or whatever that was. And very few people were discussing the rights of children or the needs of children. And so along that journey, I connected with a lot of children who had missed out on those fundamental rights, specifically kids with same-sex parents, but then moving into the world of kids who are donor-conceived, children who suffered through a divorce and lost a full or partial relationship with one of their parents there. And after working with kids for 20 years, I know that when a kid's able to be honest, really the most painful experiences that they go through in life can almost always be traced back to losing their mother or father, or the disruption that goes along with a divorce. So the fact that these fundamental issues were being ignored and that the voices of these kids were being ignored, I just think is a massive injustice. And so I've collected several other incredible advocates, people who are willing to stand up and speak up about this. And many of them are children themselves, children of divorce, children with lesbian or gay or transgender parents, children who are donor conceived, who have said, you know what, the decisions that adults are making that prioritize their own desire above the rights of children, that's harmful to kids. And we need some kind of formal body. We need some kind of formal organization that can advocate on behalf of this population that can't advocate for themselves. So that's what Them Before Us is all about. Them, children, before us, adults. And that's the idea. I'm really excited about it.
Well, you say that there is a root cause for nearly all of our social problems, and it begins with children and their homes. Explain a little bit about what you mean by that.
Right. You know, I've got dear, dear friends who are on the left side of the political spectrum who are very concerned about poverty and homelessness and falling academic success among students, high incarceration rates, teen pregnancies, all of these major social ills that we are fighting as a society. And yet, if you look at the root cause of all of them, you will find a common factor, and that is family breakdown, specifically fatherlessness. You know, fatherlessness is the main way that we see this loss of children's rights manifest in our culture today. And that has massive implications, not just for those individual children who are disproportionately at risk, but for all of society. I mean, 90% of homeless and runaway youth are fatherless. 70 to 85% of prison inmates came from a fatherless home. 63% of teenagers who commit suicide have absent fathers. Kids are four times more likely to grow up in poverty if they are fatherless. I mean, everything that we're tackling, from, you know, childhood obesity to addiction to behavioral issues, almost all of these can be found or are greatly complicated by the fact that these kids are struggling with losing a relationship with one or both parents, or struggling through the instability of not having their mom and dad loving them together in the same home. And so I tell my friends on the left, I say, I am for all of these solutions to all of these causes, but you will not get what you want. So we can't keep throwing money at the problem. You know, we can't keep enlarging our institutions. We have to fix the one institution that children can't live without, and that's the family.
You're listening to Family Policy Matters, a resource from NC Family. To listen to our radio show online and for more resources that will help you be a voice of persuasion in your community, go to our website at ncfamily.org.
So how does the definition of parenthood, which seems to be in relatively constant flux today, factor into all of this?
Well, you know, culturally, we have been treating children as commodities for a while, right? Thinking that, well, if the adults are happy, the kids will be happy, right? I think that was the justification for a long time when adults were considering unilateral or no-fault divorce. And now we've got decades of social science to show us that not only is that untrue, but it's incredibly detrimental to children, even in a quote-unquote good divorce. You know, even where they're just splitting time between both parents and they haven't lost a full relationship with dad or mom, we still see that children of divorce struggle for life in the most critical areas, you know, from their own relationships and marriages to work to mental health. So for a long time, we have sort of conceptualized culturally of children in a way where we treated them as commodities to be cut and pasted into any adult relationship. And now in law, you know, we are seeing that really take form. You know, earlier this year in Washington State, we had, they passed the Uniform Parentage Act, which completely redefined parenthood. It literally said that if you have the means to acquire sperm, egg, and womb, you can manufacture a child into existence, and you can be the legal parent of that child regardless of whether or not you've got a genetic connection with that child. So parenthood has moved away from, or is moving away from, being based on a biological connection, which is critical to child well-being and child rights. Now we're moving in the direction of parenthood being based on intent. I intend to parent this child, therefore I should be the legal parent. Now, as somebody who has a background in adoption, it would be complete malpractice to place a child with an unrelated adult who intends to parent them. Why is that? Because in the adoption world, we understand that unrelated adults pose a pretty serious risk to child well-being, and that non-biological caregivers do not statistically provide the same level of security and benefit, nurture, attachment, and permanence in the lives of children. And that's why in adoption, we have developed decades of best practice where we vet and screen potential parents. So, we have taken culturally what's going on, which is kind of disregarding the rights of children to both parents, and now we are codifying it into law.
Well, and I believe you've characterized it as, when speaking about the law, is that it is increasingly viewing children as objects of rights rather than subjects of rights. And I thought that was very insightful.
Yeah. And what that simply means is, instead of viewing children as people who have rights that deserve to be respected and protected, we see them as something that is owed to adults, right? Rather than saying, this child has a natural right to both biological parents, as is recognized in the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, which is the most widely ratified treaty in the world. Rather than viewing children that way, we think an adult wants something so bad that now children are increasingly viewed as something to which adults are owed. And therefore, their natural right to one or both parents is intentionally severed so that adults can have what they want.
So, Katie, what role do children and adults, for that matter, who have survived a myriad of difficult family situations, as you've described, what role do they have in these conversations, and what are they saying to you and others who were involved in this movement?
Well, I think they should have a central role. I think that the main reason why we failed in the marriage debate is because we focused too much on the adults. We didn't give children the center stage because it's really their lives that we're talking about. When anything that has to do with marriage and parenthood, the adults have something to say, but it's really the kids' lives that are going to be the most impacted for the long term. And while there are definitely stories out there of kids who were conceived through a sperm donor who don't have any problem with it, or kids who are raised by two moms or two dads who think that it was great, the reality is that there is a huge population of kids who feel like losing a relationship with one or both of their parents, often intentionally, that has developed, caused a lifelong wound, a primal wound. And so I am honored to have friends and fellow advocates who grew up in situations like that, who are now taking the lead and saying, those children who experienced loss, those children whose rights were violated, those children whose needs were put aside so that adults could prioritize their own desires, those children should take center stage whenever we discuss issues of family structure. So that's what we're doing. We have collected a story bank on our website of children of divorce and abandonment, children who are conceived using sperm donors, and certainly egg donors are going to be joining us as they age, children conceived through egg donors, children who have been conceived through surrogates. But we've got a story bank on our website because we think people should have to look in the face of the kids that are affected and say, yeah, it's no big deal that your rights were sacrificed so that an adult could have what they want. I think that when lawmakers and even just our friends in the culture, when they see the actual cost through the stories and the studies, that's what's going to turn the tide, that's really what's going to make people stand up and take note and really reevaluate these issues.
Well, Katie, I certainly expect that is the case, and I know that many of our listeners would be interested in where they can go to learn more about Them Before Us and to access those valuable resources that you've talked about.
Yeah, well, we've got a website, thembeforeus.com. Jump on and sign up at the very bottom and get our email updates, and we're going to be producing podcasts and videos, always collecting new stories. And sharing about items in the news that we are going to try to reframe so that we can look at all of these developments, whether it's a celebrity divorce or new policy. We want everyone to look at those issues through the lens of the children. And so you're going to find all of that at our website, thembeforeus.com. We need as many people as possible on board with this mission because it's going to affect everyone.
And with that, Katie Faust, unfortunately, we're out of time for this week, but I want to thank you so much for being with us on Family Policy Matters and for your strong commitment to prioritizing the rights and needs of children in our culture and around the globe. So thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me, John.
You've been listening to Family Policy Matters, a production of NC Family. to listen to our radio show online, and for more valuable resources and information about issues important to families in North Carolina, go to our website at ncfamily.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook.